Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias, it's time to hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up. We are fresh off of a rather expansive game slate on Wednesday night, since we were off on Tuesday. And buddy, I'm still reeling from the end of Blazers King. I was in shambles with that one. I was in shambles at the end of the Warriors game. What a fun start to the season this year. I'm enjoying myself so far.
Basketball's fun.
The regular season matters.
Time to enjoy it.
Hey, what's going on here? Oh, goodness. But no, I'm having a lot of fun. Happy to be here as we record on this Thursday morning. Let's get into some news items, and then we're going to dig into the mailbag because, buddy, have y'all followed the prompt? What I said, we don't have to wait for a prompt. Just send in basketball questions as you send them. Y'all listened, and I genuinely appreciate it. So we have a lot to get to. We're going to have some fun. Let's get to some news items very quickly. First, something that we apparently disagreed with on the timeline without directly disagreeing with each other. There's a report, I think, from Shams Charania that the NBA was considering expanding the draft into a two-day event, similar to what the NFL is doing, where you have round one. That's 3 days, but they're thinking about it. And we may get the change as early as 2024, which would mean the next draft. So, Steve, I'll start with you. Tell us how you feel and why you feel the way you do.
Why you start with me? You the one who likes it. You tell the world why you enjoy it.
I'm just kind of here. Like, I think on a very basic level, for the people that love transactions as much as they do, I think if you do have a two-day event, I want to figure out, like, how they plan on doing it. If it's just going to be first round, second round, if you're going to get, like, the lottery on one night and then the rest of the draft on the second night, I need to see how they're going to do it. But I do think splitting it will give teams more room and more time to execute draft night trades. So that part can be exciting. And for me, it just being like a sap, as I rant every time we have like a tampering issue and a pick gets taken away, like I want more players to have their moments getting called up on stage. And I think it's a lot easier to do that with it being split versus we get the first round and everything. And then the second round just feels like a speed run. So part sentimental, part like more practicality in terms of moves. So that's why I'm here for it if they do split it up, depending on how they split it up.
Well, let's talk about it, man.
Okay.
Number one, I think from a team perspective, I understand why teams would want to space this out to have more time. The second round is literally like speed run. It is speed run. It is go, go, go. You have this window of time. If you ain't talked to a team or they ain't answered the phone, whatever you might have thought of cooking up might just be gone. Mm-hmm. I've seen it. Been in the draft room. So I totally understand when they're coming from there. I would probably rather just extend the time they have in the second round than push it to a second day. And my thought process is this. The difference between the NBA and the NFL, this is not necessarily anyone's fault, and we have great players who pop in the second round, but there's no guarantee that these folks are going to make the team. So what is the coverage going to be? What is that going to be philosophy-wise? Who are we hyping up? Who are we talking about? And then for me, it's like, what transactions are we going to see that we didn't already see in night one? How is night two going to beat night one? Does it now just become an afterthought, production-wise? And then when it comes to like the sentimental moments, that sounds fantastic. Again, this is not a guarantee. And B, the NBA only invites a certain amount of players anyways to avoid, hey, you're just there waiting to get your name called. I would not want that for second round players to a degree. I think it's a tough enough climb anyway. So I understand why it would happen. Some of the reasons why, how it could be helpful. It doesn't move me that much. It doesn't move me. Because how many second round picks have played this year for teams?
feel like just probably a handful.
That's kind of the bit for me.
I got you.
I mean, if this is going to tie into the G League, there's a different path, and I'm cool with it, but I don't.
I see. So I guess that was going to be like one of my follow-up questions for you. Like, does the potential G League tie-in change anything for you? Or how much would it change for you?
It would help knowing that there would be a home for these people that are getting picked. Mm-hmm. Because the second round can turn into stash land to a degree. And there's also the point of some guys don't even want to be drafted in the second round. They'd rather be able to pick their own adventure to a degree. So it's just, to me, it's like, I get what y'all are saying, but also it's, let's see how this goes.
Okay, that makes sense.
And also, you're going to be upset when people on TV saying stuff about players that doesn't make any sense. I can already tell you that right now. You're going to be mad about it. So don't get too hyped, bud.
Well, see, here's the thing, right? One, I was going to do that anyway because that's just how I am. But two, I do wonder if you do have it spaced out and you're not tasking whoever you were given the assignment to have intel on 58 to 65 people. If you can split it in half, does that make it better per day? Would be a thought that I would have. But again, like, I'm not in those rooms, so I don't know. But anyway, that's where I was. Your size certainly makes sense, especially considering the non-guaranteed portion of the second round. Like, that's a point that I probably should have considered a little bit more. So kudos to you on that front. Couple of free agency signings. We missed Gui Santos to Golden State as we finished recording after that happened. Kevin Knox going back to the Pistons. Do either of those signings move you?
Kevin Knox in Detroit, again, is kind of fun, I guess.
Kevin Knox did shoot, I think, slightly over 37% from three in his stint with Detroit last year. So if they are just looking for bodies that can shoot, that have size, kind of fits the ethos of what Detroit's trying to do in their front court. I get it. Has some familiarity. While a lot of their forwards are just out right now. So makes some sense as some depth of familiar face in the room. I do wonder if he's going to be in the rotation anytime soon. We shall see. I think for Golden State and Gui Santos, it feels like another flyer on the big as they are just trying to find more bodies that they may feel comfortable with in their system. Which reminds me, like, we got a mailbag question about Tracy Jackson Davis and his play so far. I wanted to save that one for when we get to our first rookie report, because I do think his minutes have been solid and he's an interesting, he's just an interesting fit in that front court, period. But he's played well. So, man, even with Gui, like, I don't know how much he plays, but that would raise the brow and also just slightly annoy me because it's like, man, we just finished recording. Why did this pop up now? But those are my early thoughts on the signings. Quickly on the injury front, there are so many with just early heads up. We're not getting to literally everyone that's been hurt. But worth noting, especially in light of the week that the Sacramento Kings have had, De'Aaron Fox remains out with the ankle injury. He's missed the last four. The Kings are 0-4 in those games. Walker Kessler is going to be reevaluated in 2 weeks with an elbow injury. They had a new starting lineup last night. Keontae George in the guard room, naturally, but he got his first start as they shovel things around in the front court as well. Tyler Hero suffered a pretty gnarly ankle twist last night against the Grizzlies. He said he's probably going to be out at least a couple of weeks. We don't have an official timeline on that as of recording, but that did not look great. If we did not touch on it, Robert Williams III, he's going to require right knee surgery. He's likely out for the season. And Jamal Murray out with a hamstring injury, expected to miss at least the rest of the month.
Can we turn injuries off again, please?
I would like to do that, yeah.
I would like these guys to be able to be healthy and play. It's tough. De'Aaron Fox playing at a high level. He's super important to the Kings. Tyler Hero, it didn't look great. And then he talked about crunches and cracks in his ankle. Yeah. And so I don't anticipate him, and that's a bummer because he's had a great start, and Miami kind of needs his offensive firepower, so they got to figure it back out again. Robert Williams having to go down again after a new start, that's a bummer. And then Jamal Murray, I would just like for him to not have any sort of leg, just no more leg stuff. Let's let those just be. Like, it's now you got to do the same rinse and repeat of, we got to make sure this is right, make sure he's healed. Now we got to get back and ramp him back up. And it's like, I would like to see the best version of these guys. So it's unfortunate, man.
It's unfortunate indeed. A quick question on the Denver front, because Jamal's going to be out again, at least through the end of the month for Woj. You have Reggie Jackson in the guard room, who has been playing well this season. if you are Denver, do you just roll what you have? Do you try to add like a third point guard as extra insurance while Jamal is out?
Roll with what you have. Roll with what you have. There's I just don't see the need to go to an outside source and try to bring them into what you're doing when you can just kind of shift some of the responsibilities to a degree. Mm-hmm. And now maybe you just open up more minutes for Julian Strother. Maybe Gillespie plays more minutes and can fit that role. Christian Brown can do some more things. Just take what you got and add another piece. Maybe it's Justin Holiday. Someone just soak up a couple more of these minutes. But let's try and stay on the track that if we can, possibly. Because we know what we need. We're not going to have Jamal Murray, but we know what we need from the bench. Let's try and get that going. I mean, it's funny because Reggie Jackson playing next to Jokic, I think he was quoted saying, he makes me look like I know what I'm doing. Which I just thought was a hilarious dynamic. But I mean, you get more Reggie, he's there for a reason. He soaks up more minutes. You ask your bench to do the same things they need to. That's probably where my eyes go, is what does the second unit look like consistently? Because part of that was Jamal Murray playing with them and playing with Reggie. Mm-hmm. So you kind of had a hub. How do they now manufacture some offense there? We'll see, but I don't think you need to go third guard yet.
Okay, makes sense. All right, that concludes a very quick injury report. Let's get into some of these mailbag questions. Again, thank you to everyone who sent them in, and I will repeat the same thing. You do not have to wait for a prompt that we're doing a special mailbag episode. If you have basketball questions while you're watching, on the way to work, whatever the case may be, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. That is dunkerspot@yahoo.com, and we will get to them. So let's kick this off with a couple of questions from Joey. Says, hey guys, first off, thank you so much for your amazing work. You've taught me so much about the game of basketball, increasing my basketball IQ as both a viewer and player, while deepening my fandom and appreciation of the game. Well, thank you. My questions are, I think this first one's going to be more geared towards Steve, but first question is, what is the NBA opponent scouting process like? Who does it? How are the reports put together? What are the key inputs? How is it presented to the coaches and players? How does something like Second Spectrum factor in? How does regular season prep vary from playoff prep, et cetera, et cetera? There's lots kind of questions fed, about scouting.
What kind of Fed question is this?
Not a Fed question.
What is this, Joey?
He wants hey, to learn.
Tell me all them secrets, big dog. Buttered me up and then...
Really appreciate you. So how do you do this?
It's like when your manager tells you to go, let's go to lunch. And then, never mind. Anyways. I'll dive into it. Statute of limitations. I could talk about it a little bit. My phone is dry. I'm not Nikias. It's okay.
Oh, here we go.
Got you. So basically you have your head scout, your advanced scout. They are watching the teams on the road. Some teams have broken it up into regional scouts. Won't dive too deep, but basically someone is watching these teams live and in person. They're going to send you the scouting report, the advanced scout. Diagram plays, play calls, what they see, what they've been trying to do. Get that as a coaching staff. Properly, you get that before you start your work. So now, technically, it's a study guide. Cool, I got my stuff. You're a coach, every team's different, but back in my day, you watched the last five games a team played. That should give you enough of a sample size of what they're doing, who they played against, what they're trying to do offensively, defensively. You should get a nice sample size. You try and like break it down to the last two, you probably missed out on something. You watch them too early, you probably missed out on something. So you watch the last five. And then you put together your notes on their personnel, what they're doing, what we're trying to take away, how we can beat them, what they might try and do to us, et cetera, et cetera. You put that together and then you display that to the coaches around that game, if that makes sense. So, hey, that's our next opponent. Here's the stuff we have. Ideally, like a day before, unless it's a back-to-back, then you just got to get it out as soon as possible. But, yeah, give that to the coaches first. Let them digest it. Then you have a meeting about it. Go through the film. All that good stuff. Players, usually day of. Certain scenarios, you might give them something like a day before or a back-to-back or something like that. But usually day of. You're bring them in, show them tape, all that good stuff. Everyone's a little different. So analytics, some people may use certain things to try and paint the picture, but essentially you're trying to paint the picture of what this team is and what they do and what we should look out for and how we can stop them and how we can win. How does regular season prep vary from playoff prep? Massively. Playoff prep is a different beast. You are taking this one team and dissecting every single thing about them. So if you want to talk about analytics, those come in play a big time. So, I mean, we're talking personnel. Here's what they do this amount of times. They shoot this from here. They're trying to do this. Shot clock, info, all that good stuff. But, yeah, we're going to know every single thing we can know about this team, about these players, and we're going to try and take it away. So it's a massive leap. From game to game, it's different. Playoff prep is crazy. But, yeah, like, I mean, for me, I used to have, like, a handful of teams that were mine. And whenever they came up on the schedule, I did my thing, threw it out there. Sometimes you had three in a row, and you just cried afterwards. But, yeah.
Oh, geez.
There you go, Joey.
That does not sound fun. So, like, how – potentially a bad question, so an early apology. But, like, how long would you say the average, like, scout takes to put together?
What do you mean?
I guess just, like, putting film together, getting it prepared, et cetera, et cetera.
Like a week.
Oh, okay.
You're watching the last five games.
Yeah.
So go look at the schedule, see the last five games they played. That's about the time you're doing it.
Yeah. I didn't know so if you were like doing these supercuts of anything or.
Oh, you're doing everything. Imagine you have two teams that you're prepping for at the same time while still doing everything for your team. It takes a lot of work. If you do it right. Now, some people, anyways.
All
right. But yeah, it takes a good chunk of time to be able to watch these games. And then put everything together in a concise package. Like, if I ever released all the notes I had, y'all would think I was a sicko.
Well, thank you for the insight. I'm sorry I could not personally add to it.
Thank you for the insight, he says.
I'm thanking you on behalf of Joey. No, that's good. No, that's good.
Thank you for the insight, he says.
What I do? All right.
Man treated my answer like meatloaf.
I did no such thing. This dovetails nicely into the second question from Joey. Well, I guess technically like the knife question, but at any rate, what are your favorite hashtag Big Mad Pod moments of each other?
Do you want to go first? Or you want me to go first?
I'm curious to hear what you have for me.
Well, the whole genesis was based on you getting mad on the internet constantly because you would just get mad on the internet and then I would just take it and poke at you on the pod. Whatever you ranted about, I'll just poke at you. So honestly, it's like a calendar now. Awards, All-Star, All-Star voting is always a good one. My favorite ones are when I sneak one in during free throws. Because I think if we build the document out, know what we're going to talk about, Nikias is usually aware of where I may try and poke 7 times out of 10, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if I can get him... late in the pod was something that I know he has a take on and he's not ready for it. And you just hear the, oh. That's when I know I did it. So any of those are pretty good.
Gosh.
Any of those are pretty good. So usually I would probably say All-Star is probably my favorite because it's just so consistent.
I see. See, it's unfair. I don't want to say unfair. It's probably the wrong word for it. But, like, it's different for you because I feel like I get the big mads pre or post pod. The real big mads from Steve. I would say on the pod, once February 28th, 2023, once Steve started, we were flowing into free throws, he was like, nah, actually, I'm going first. And it was just an affront for him to get his rant off about the MVP discussion. That man started with between Jokic and Embiid, who's waffles and who's pancakes? And I knew right then and there, Steve had some bars to let off. Oh, that is probably my favorite one. Because I was not expecting him to take over the free throw segment and use the free throws. But actually, I have things to say. Because like, I just didn't answer who was waffles and who's pancakes. Like that, it was just a fake question. It was like take laundering of some sort. Like he needed that one as a vehicle to get into his thoughts. So that's probably my favorite one from Steve. Oh goodness.
You want to talk about the Porzingis episode?
Oh god. That has aged so well. My favorite Big Mad Pod was probably that Porzingis episode of season one. I have definitely I earned my stripes on that episode. Like, we about to moderate, we gonna answer, we gonna move. I see where this is at. Okay. All right, next question gonna come from the one, the only PD Webb. Are there any lineups in this young season that you would like a push notification for?
I wish I had specifics. For me, it's like a larger context. I wish there was just something that would tell me when weird lineups were out there. Like, I want to know when Kawhi's at the five, or when KD's at the five, or if LeBron's at the five, or if like two or three bigs are playing together at the same time, or like an all 6'7" or above lineup is out there. Like, I just want wacky lineups to just come into my feed. That's what I want push notifications for. Hey, the Thunder are playing four guards. They can all drive. You should tune in now. Oh, you're right. I should do that.
It's red zone for weird lineups.
Yeah, like wacky let zone. Me know when the let me know when the all bench lineup is out there for more than 5 minutes. Let me just see what's going on.
Oh Lord.
Like, I just want to tap into that kind of stuff. What say you? I'm sure you had specific ones. I'm sorry, PD. I wish I had more direct ones for you, but that's my bigger context. I just want to see the fun stuff.
You know your co-host. I do indeed have specific lineups. So some lineups that I would like push notifications for. We start with Charlotte when they go to the jumbo lineup. When they have LaMelo, Brandon Miller, Gordon Hayward, PJ, and Mark Williams out there. Just all of the size, all of the length. Also, a plus 11 net rating in 38 minutes so far. So that's fun. We've only gotten 6 minutes of CP3, Steph, Clay, Wiggins, and Draymond so far this year. So I just want the alert for that one just to see, hey, is this actually going to work? Is this going to be the small unit that just blows teams out the water, or is it going to be an issue? You mentioned like OKC with four guards. I have an Indiana four guard lineup. I guess technically a four guard lineup. Haliburton, Hield, Bruce Brown, Aaron Nesmith, Miles Turner. Blowing teams away in only 13 minutes of play so far. The Spurs with Trey Jones in. Just as a concept, I would just like those. But Trey, Vassell, Keldon, Wimby, and Zach, plus 29 net in 16 minutes so far. Toronto with Dennis Schroeder, OG, Otto Porter, welcome back. Pascal Siakam and Scotty Barnes, absolutely blowing teams out the water. They've only played 12 minutes together. So, like, those are just a few where I'm just like, give me the alert. I want to see how this group grows. How big is the sample going to get? How are they operating?
I don't know what's funnier. The fact that you had specific lineups, or that you started with Charlotte.
Alphabetical order.
Like, unbelievable bit by you. To not disrespect the great PD, probably when Minnesota plays Rudy, Kat, and Naz Reid at the same time, I would like to know when and why that's happening.
Gotcha.
There you go.
All right, we have one from Nathan. I believe this is D. Nate Jones. Hello, first of all, I thank you for bringing sanity to the hot take sanity of the sports coverage with curiosity, balance, and appreciation. I always feel more calm about the NBA in general when I listen to you. Also, I just appreciate so much the amount of time and effort you have dedicated to elevating the conversation around the WNBA, and I think your refusal to view the league as anything less than premier is making an impact in how the league is perceived. It gives me hope that the narrative around professional sports can shift. I digress. On to the question. Well, thank you for that, first and foremost.
Thank you.
As someone who has been following Devin Booker since he entered the league, there was always a lot of fever dreaming about Point Book when they were toiling away in the NBA cellar. Now we have seen him put those experiences to effective use in the playoffs when Chris Paul went out, and in two games this season, he's averaging 30 and 10. My question is this sustainable for Book, and does the addition of Beal raise or lower that ceiling? I imagine that since Book is second in assist rate to Haliburton, that the return of Beal means better shooting on those passes from Book, but that Beal's own usage rate will diminish those opportunities. Where do you feel he lands by the end of the year, with health being an obvious caveat? And more importantly, what do you find interesting about this change in how he is used post-Chris Paul? And then secondarily, has anyone averaged 30 and 10? Could he?
Well, let's see. I think Devin Booker has evolved over the past few years with his playmaking. And it's something that I think we've tried to dive into as he's gone through it. I don't think that Bradley Beal is going to affect Booker in that way, because Devin Booker is going to be involved in that offense. Devin Booker is going to have the ball in his hands. He's going to come off staggers, push in transition. He's going to run and pick and roll. To a degree, there may be possessions where Beal starts it, but eventually the ball is going to find him. So I'm not overly concerned with Devin Booker's just going to be spaced in the corner, because that just hasn't really been the ethos of Book or Phoenix. Mm-hmm. Obviously new coaching staff, but he'll be involved. I think for me, the growth is just in how he's reading defenses and how he's bending defenses. And we've seen him kind of go from a person who can make shots, make a defense change how they guard him, and then make a play out of it, to manipulating a defense and knowing, if I get here, this is what's going to be open. And that's what I think we saw from him in the start. Obviously, a bummer that he's hurt, but we saw him tap into that more, where I know what you're trying to do. I know where the help is going to be. And in this scenario, he should have more opportunity with the ball, since it's Chris Paul isn't there. Because, and this is no disrespect to Chris Paul, but Chris Paul is going to run the show to a degree. We can both agree on that, right? Mm-hmm. That part's not going to be there anymore. So he should have more wiggle room, more autonomy to a degree. And there should be more space, more guys that he can kick to comfortably, more reads that he can make comfortably. So I think he's going to grow in that way. So I think the, like, the stat I'll look for is potential assists with Devin Booker. I don't know where he lands, like, with raw, pure assists. But keep an eye on, like, the amount of plays that he could make or that he's trying to make. Mm. That'd probably be the one for me.
Okay, good stuff, sir. I think, well, very quickly, just off the top of my head, like, I think during Russ's MVP year, he was one of the 30-point, 10-assist guys. And then if you just have the averages for Oscar Robertson in the first, like, 7 or 8 years of his career, I think he's at 30 and 10, flirting with a triple-double, too. So just very quickly to the 30 and 10 point, like, those are at least two that come to mind for me. And I would imagine, like, in the, you know, the 60s or beforehand, there were probably some other players that were getting close to 30 and 10. But as for Booker, like, it's a fun thing to where he's gotten better against what defenses are trying to throw at him. And also the context has improved over the last few years, like playing alongside Chris Paul. And now you have KD in tow. Bradley Beal is now back. And so to Steve's spacing point, like, it should be easier for him to operate. And, like, for me, when it comes to Devin Booker and the playmaking, like, I kind of go back to, or I think about the growth against traps for him, to where you could tell very early on that really bothered him. Like, it made sense in the very early Phoenix days, let's put two on the ball against Devin Booker, because who is he passing it to? This isn't a good team. Let's just get it out of his hands. And as those teams got better, it kind of shifted to, okay, let's put two to the ball because we don't know how well he handles this yet. And so seeing him progress from that to, nah, I can just string this out. I can string this out, or I can just beat you. I can just reject and go. If I need to, I can toss in a split every now and then. And now I'm just getting downhill, can stop and pop for pull-up jumpers, get all the way to the rim or make kicks from there. And so that progression on its own has been fun to watch. And then once you zoom out to the overall context, all right, yeah, you can try to trap this pick and roll with Nurk if you want to. He can make short roll reads for you. But more importantly, yeah, you can trap this if you want to, if Bradley Beal is one pass away, or if Kevin Durant is one pass away, or even down the line with the role players, Grayson Allen one pass away, Eric Gordon one pass away. Have fun. Not only do I diagnose the trap better, you're not going to have fun trying to recover now. And so I look at that, like, in terms of 30 and 10, like, I don't know if he will have those raw numbers, but I feel like he can impact the offense in that kind of way every night, just because of how good he is and how much the context has improved for him, which, you know, as Nate notes in the question, with the health caveat, because you want to have all those guys together. I'm also with Steve. Like, I don't think Beal shifts the usage too much, because I think Bradley Beal was brought in, like, he's really good, so I don't want to sell it short. But I do think what Bradley Beal can do off the ball and being able to get him in more of an off-ball role than what he was in Washington, I think that appealed to both him and the Suns. And again, within the context of Devin Booker, if this guy's off the ball, we can't commit as much defensive capital to him. And so now, like, you probably don't even see as many traps now against Devin Booker just because of who he's around. And so naturally went to second spectrum to see what that was looking like. Last three seasons for him heading into this year, blitzed on 2.6 picks per 100 possessions in 2021, went up to 3.8 the next year. It was at 4.7 last year. So steady growth. Let's get the ball out of his hands and see what he does. This year down to 3.3. And so even, again, very small sample, but even there, you can kind of see, we can't really afford to do this as much as we want to. And so now you're just going to see more switches, more drop. And Devin Booker is very comfortable operating against any of those. And once you add in the spacing context, even if he doesn't average 30, this should probably be the most efficient scoring season of his career. And even if he doesn't average 10 assists, he should average a career high in assists this year. To, again, to Steve's point, like, there is no Chris Paul to just take the pure point guard reps away from him now. Like, he is their best playmaker. So, I don't know if he lands at 30 and 10, but Devin Booker is really freaking good.
I will add, you mentioned Russ. Oscar Robertson did it 5 times, 30 and 10. Shout out to Nate Tiny Archibald.
There we go.
Did it in 72-73, 34 and 11. So there you go.
There we go. There's some history from the dunker spot. We love to see it. Next question is going to be a combination because we got a couple of people asking about the Cleveland Cavaliers. And just as a quick date note, these were sent in on November 2nd. This first part from Sean. Next one's going to come from Mark. Sean says, hello, Stephen Nikias. I hope you're feeling good, feeling great early in the season. I have some questions for the Cavs. What should I be taking away from these early season games? Because for me, they were all winnable with the healthy unit, and we haven't had a single game where all of our starters are healthy. Also, I'd like your take on Isaac Okoro's minutes so far. So we can start with the Sean portion first, if you'd like.
You should take away that you are building but still have work to do. I think there are positives for Cleveland early in this season. The first thing when I saw this question is I went to their schedule. Because I was like, okay, injuries have played a role, but who have they played? And I go and it's like, you know what makes this feel worse?
What's up?
You lost to OKC twice. You lost to Indiana twice. And then you had whatever that two-game back-to-back Knicks fest was, where you split, but you didn't feel great about either of them to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just the injuries plus the lack of feel good probably lead you to this, and you're looking at a slow start. You're 3-5. Now, 3-5 is not the end of the world because like the Eastern Conference is like a bunch of 4-4 teams right now.
Mm-hmm.
So you still have time, and you haven't been healthy. So I would say keep the hope alive. If that makes sense,
mm-hmm.
Like don't go too far off. For me, it's one of those things where I'm trying to balance how do I treat Cleveland? Because I think they're good, but I do think there are specific things they need to address to maximize what they could do in the playoffs. Like I'm still high on this team, but what's the impact of Max Strus's shooting? How much does that help your offense? Is Evan Mobley growing offensively? What does Jared Allen look like on his roles? And to me, I don't have the numbers. It's felt like when he catches on the short roll, he's looking to finish as opposed to let me hesitate or get this little flip shot off. I'm still worried about the tempo offensively. It's still just a little slow in the half court sometimes. They are pushing faster, it feels like, pure eye test. When they get a stop, we are going. But there's still the possessions where they walk it up, start a set with 17 on the clock, one option, now somebody's got to bail us out. I would like that to go away.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have more shooting, you should have a little bit more movement. How do you balance, you mentioned Okoro's start, but Caris LeVert feels like he is as comfortable as he's been as a Cav. How much does that help you? Do you know your lineups? You look at the OKC game and it's like, well, they could attack Darius Garland because of size. They could attack Donovan Mitchell because of size. They could attack Max Strus if they wanted to, which is not to say that he's a liability, but he could be someone with this unit where it's like, hey, let's put you in action.
Mm-hmm.
Caris LeVert, they might put in action. So now it's like, okay, is the defense going to be able to hold up in the playoff ceiling? Is that trade-off going to be there? So it's more just like, are they building the right things? Are they moving in the right direction to have the success when they need it? I have no doubt they'll turn it around record-wise in the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of in that Minnesota category for me, where this is cool, but have you checked off these boxes? Yeah.
Did you fix it? I got you. I will just say to the teams wanting to put certain players in action that I just quickly note again, Donovan Mitchell is working very hard to take himself out of that zone. I don't know if that just changes within a playoff context because, again, the size is just going to be the size. But that man has been working his tail off. But honestly, to that portion, like, I mostly echo your sentiments. Like, you've gotten to see the flashes of what the ceiling can be, where I point to Donovan Mitchell can just wreck a game for you. Like, Evan Mobley has had the pockets where he's super impactful on both ends of the floor. There are also some questions that I have about Evan Mobley, which we'll get to in the second half of this one. You've seen like the big three-point shooting games from Max Strus. You've also seen what it feels like when, hey, you are in here to shoot and the shots aren't falling. And Cavs fans, I would imagine, feel a little bit like Heat fans felt like sometimes last year. It's like, oh, well, if he's not knocking down shots, what are we getting here exactly? And so it has been uneven. The record points to that. For me, it's just kind of been trying to eye, at least up until like Jared Allen and Darius Garland got back. It's like, okay, we're getting an early glance at what some of these Mobley at five lineups look like and how they hold up. We're getting an early glimpse of, okay, how is Max Strus going to be used here? How much more growth do we see with the Mitchell-Mobley pick and roll pairing in particular? We know what Mobley projects to be offensively. We know what Donovan Mitchell can do in pick and roll. How are y'all playing off of that? How are y'all blending actions between those two? To Steve's tempo point, okay, if it is Mobley at the five, can we boost up the tempo in the half court? In which sometimes it's yes, a lot of times it's no to the tempo point. And so like I'm not in like red flag zone with Cleveland or anything like that. It has been a wonky start, but I'm also just kind of putting in my head, this has been an interesting schedule to Steve's point, but more so for me, they just don't have the full assortment. And I think the beauty of Cleveland is being able to say, okay, we got Mitchell and Mobley right now. We got Garland and Allen right now. We can play all four of these dudes and then mix and match pieces. Cause at the end of the year, it's just like, if they're healthy, who's the fifth can they produce? That's kind of like my big thing. And then obviously you have the, does Mobley and Allen fit together long-term and those kind of things like that. But because we haven't had Allen and we haven't had Garland for large portions of this, like maybe it's unfair for me to say I've given them a bit of a pass as I've been watching them. But for me, like I've given them a little bit of a pass. Like, okay, some of this doesn't look great, but this also just isn't the team that I expect to be fully analyzing. And so I've been in wait and see mode with Cleveland so far.
I think it's just consistency. I think that's all it is for them. Can they start to rebuild some of the consistency? That should help with their guys being back in action. And does the schedule start to shift for them? Now, the problem is, like, you could probably make an argument OKC is just not a good matchup for them. You could probably make the argument Indiana is not the most fun matchup with them, even though they competed in those games. But now you look at a stretch at Golden State, at Sacramento, at Portland. Then you got home against Detroit, home against Denver, at Philadelphia, home against Miami, home against the Lakers, home against Toronto. You gotta pick up some big wins in November. Mm-hmm. That's a very important homestand for me from the 17th to the 30th. Can you start to find your way a little bit?
Mm-hmm. And it's one of those to where like you can make the argument, especially in light of some of the injuries that some of the teams you listed are suffering through right now. There's the one, like Anthony Davis didn't play on Wednesday because of the hip. So we'll see if that's a long-term thing or not. But like all of those teams, even if you feel Cleveland is ultimately better, every last one of those teams has something that could poke at one of the questions that we have about the Cavs. And so it's going to be fun to kind of watch them work through some of those, and hopefully they can pick up some big wins. To the second portion, the question came from Mark on the same day. Hi, guys, Cavs fan here. I've heard a lot of basketball analysts talk about Evan Mobley and Jared Allen ultimately being a pairing that would limit the team offensively. Therefore, they need to have Evan be the five. But with the very limited sample we've seen this season without Allen, I can't say I love that proposition. Mobley looks somewhat physically overmatched. What do you guys think about all of this? What we've seen now and where the Cavs might end up regarding these two down the road?
Go ahead, Nikias. Evan Mobley, this is your thing, bud. This is,
okay. So, with uh-oh. Evan Mobley.
Oh, no.
What does that mean?
Oh, no. You ain't never started an Evan Mobley topic with okay, so.
So here's the thing. It's very early. I'll just start with some basic numbers and I'll get into like my actual point analysis, whatever. So far this year, 209 minutes for the Cleveland Cavaliers with Evan Mobley on the floor without Jared Allen. They have been outscored by 24 points in those minutes. Evan Mobley is converting 52% of his twos. That is down from last year. He's taken 3.4 free throw attempts per game so far this year. That is also down from last year. I think for me with Evan Mobley, I think he has been fine offensively. And I wish I could say it's been better than fine, especially in light of what we saw from him post All-Star break last year. But I think he's been fine. I think he's still very much trying to sort through who he is and what he wants to do when he gets these short roll opportunities. You see the pockets of where he's just super decisive, either getting into the push shot, taking a dribble and getting to the rim. making a quick pass out to the corner or finding a Coral on a cut. You see those flashes. You also see those flashes, and I go back to like the pair of Knicks games, to where he catches and it's a pause, and then it's a look, and then it's a nervous dribble, and then it's another look. And whatever advantage was created is just kind of gone. I don't want to say I'm worried, but like I thought that portion would be a little further along just in terms of processing speed. If he catches on the short roll, puts up the shot, and he misses, dud, sucks that he misses. But like I check that off as, okay, he knows what he wants to do. That's cool. I will take that. If it's an immediate catch, swing to the corner, he's anticipating that rotation to come down. It doesn't come. Okay, it stinks. Now you got to create something else in that possession. But all right, he caught it. He saw it. He made the move. That's fine. I don't like seeing some of the pauses that I'm seeing from Evan Mobley in short roll opportunities. And to the physically overmatched point, I don't want to go that far. But like I will say, like the strength difference, like it kind of perks up when you see him against Mitchell Robinson. Like, it does feel louder in that sense. And, like, there is just a world where, okay, but Mitchell Robinson may just be a player that bothers him, period. But there are just some matchups for players, as reductive as that may sound, I apologize. There are some players that just bother other players. And so, like, that might just be one. I do think it is kind of fair to wonder, well, I think it's fair to say, like, is Evan Mobley ready to be your 95% of his minutes are spent at the five? I don't think Evan Mobley's ready for that yet.
It's interesting because my concern with Evan Mobley at the five when Jaren Allen was out was, oh, we're losing some of the defense stuff, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
He kind of just has to do five stuff. Like, you lose some of the, I can switch, I can take this away. It's kind of just drop or bust, which takes, like, the volume down
mm-hmm.
a little bit from what he can do defensively.
Yeah, he's been good in drop. But
offensively, it's not that he's bad, but it's just, it's going to be drop or bust. So I think that may have an impact. Offensively, at the five, is he spacing? Is he screening? Is he rolling? Is he posting up and attacking switches? That's the stuff I probably look at. And I don't know how much of that you can exploit. I think it's an important thing for Cleveland to have, so that you can have the minutes where Mobley can pick and roll and do what he does at the five, and Jared Allen can also potentially have those moments with a unit. To separate them, I think, is important to maybe get them going. My issue is not with their skill sets. It's more, can they match together to raise the ceiling? Like, is Jared Allen going to be good enough on the short roll to punish teams who say, you got to finish? AKA like the Knicks did. And can Evan Mobley improve enough at some of the four stuff, quote unquote, catch and shoot, attack and closeouts, driving, which we saw him progress in last year. Can he make another leap in those departments? So now those two can really work together.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think if you can get a step up from one of them in the areas, it makes sense. If they kind of clash in the same ways, and then you have hesitation or not finishing on roles from both of them, you kind of find yourself in the same boat.
Mm.
So I think that for them is going to be the journey to be able to merge those two things together.
Mm. And I think just to bounce off of that, like long-term, like I don't think they have to make that decision now. Like, this is why it's a long-term thing. Like I do still believe if we're talking 2, 3, 4 years from now, like I think Mobley at the five very much will just be the thing. Like I do believe that the best iteration of this team is going to be Mobley at the five. I think just with the early goings, you would have liked for that sample to look a little bit better than it did. But like, I am still kind of in the camp, like one of them, like Jared, I don't know if Jared plus Evan's going to be like a 4 or 5 year thing. I think you're just going to commit those resources to Evan Mobley, and you're going to look for a bulkier five that can take more threes and really open up space for him as Mobley continues to grow in a literal sense and like physically. But like, I'm not at the eject button yet. I think if Mobley's good, I think he's going to be very good. But those kind of things, like, it's more offense for me. Like, that's a great point from Steve about some of the scheme versatility being limited with him just playing the five. And I do wonder how much they can try with Mobley at the five. Because they did make a concerted effort, like, let's get some bigger wings in the building. Let's get some fours in the room. Like, Dean Wade back healthy now. You play him at the four. You can play George Niang at the four. But it's just like, I can understand a coach saying, well, I don't know if we want to go switch all defensively still. Well, we added the size, we added the shooting more importantly. But like, what happens if teams are just like, all right, let's run some dummy action. Let's get Evan Mobley switched out way over here. Now let's target this guy. Let's see what you do. And those defenders may not be ready to defend a heavy dose of like mismatch hunting. And if that's a thing that pops in the regular season, you're absolutely not going to be able to do it in the playoffs. Not comfortably anyway. And so like that may just be more personnel around Evan more than Evan himself. Because we saw when he's at the four, that just unlocks the full breadth of what he can do defensively. And that's why he was in the defensive player of the year running last year. Those are my early Cleveland Cavaliers thoughts. They are a fascinating team, though. Next one going to come from Nick, who says, hey, Stephen Nikias, love the pod and all the new content y'all are making. One of your questions for the Celtics heading into the season was how Drew would be utilized within the offense. What have you seen so far, both as a screener and a ball handler? I have been impressed with his pick and roll playmaking and his ability to manipulate and set up mismatches for Tatum, Porzingis, and Brown to attack in the post.
I like how Drew's been utilized. I think him as a screener is fun, not just in pick and roll with Tatum or Brown, but also off ball. I just think you can create some fun things there. I do think it's interesting how they now just kind of lean on that in the fourth quarter still, to where it's Tatum screening for Drew to try and get a switch and you play out of it that way. Drew has felt sudden to me offensively, to where, oh yeah, Drew Holiday could do that. You know, start a game with a post up, no one is near him because everyone's space and he scores, or quick attack and transition. And it's like, oh yeah, Drew has been doing this scoring thing. And now in the context of Boston, when he does it and taps into that every now and then, it's tough. So I feel like it hasn't been forced from him offensively. I think the cutting has been there. I think the off-ball movement has been there. I think it's been fun. As a ball handler, again, it's just a different context. If he's able to get in the paint and draw help, look at who the kickouts go to. And so the biggest thing for me is probably in transition. Having him and Derek White that you can just quickly throw the ball ahead to and they can attack and get you into stuff, I think that brings a lot of great value to Boston. So I've liked the fit a lot of how Drew has taken what he's built over the last few years and just plugged that right into what Boston does.
Like, I have mostly enjoyed the Drew experience. Like, the screening thing was something that I brought up in the preview. Like, hey, not that he can't do it, but it's just not something that he's done with volume. On ball and off ball, setting about 5.5 picks per 100 possessions. From on ball picks, that's up from 1.6. So that's a pretty big jump. And off ball, that's up from 2.4. So again, a pretty big jump. So he slid it right in. He has been able to create those mismatches. It's been hand in glove in that regard. The pick and roll play, it's been solid. I felt a little bit uneven in terms of the decision-making, but that's also just me with Drew, it feels like. And it feels like the Minnesota game was one of the first loud, hey, did we need this one in terms of shots? Or, hey, you probably had an easier pass here if you got off of it. So like that. But again, like the fact that that's been the loudest, at least for me, the fact that that's been like the loudest game and that was still a game ultimately Boston could have won against the best defense in the league right now. I think you take that. He's felt very additive on both ends. Like, the defense has been as advertised. Like, we just saw him just get the Embiid matchup last night. Typical screen navigation. Like, he's made some fun plays there. Like, the post-ups, I'm glad that's something that you hit on. Because the spacing around those post-ups are just going to be something that he just hasn't been able to see throughout his career. So that's a fun element. And again, it's not super dissimilar to what Marcus Smart was doing on the occasional post-up during his Boston tenure. And so, like, this deal feels like a very good context for him. Drew has been very good for Boston overall. Like, I will continue to keep an eye on the decision-making, especially in light of, like, something that you brought up with Boston. They're going to have to be able to play through and play out of those switches that they're going to see against really good teams. And, like, in one sense, if Drew Holiday is on the floor with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, like, he's likely just getting your third best defender. And so he will have matchups to play with. But also, if you're getting heavy usage Drew in, like, a fourth quarter, we've seen him take over games, and we've also seen him put games in trouble because of some of the decisions or shots that he takes. So, like, that's something that I'm just going to continue to monitor within the playoff context with Boston, but I've enjoyed the Drew experience so far in Boston. Next one going to come from Michael, who says, hi, Nikias and Steve. Hope you two are starting the week off well. Indeed. I had two questions for you. I actually thought of this while watching soccer, but I hope it keeps with Nikias' prompt. Do you think there are strategies or theories from other sports that could be carried over to basketball? I know during the Heatles years, there was talk that Spo used some of the philosophies of Chip Kelly in designing their offense. Like, I think just general, like, it's interesting that you bring up soccer. Because, like, I kind of think through, as someone that is still very much learning about the sport, just seeing how players try to create passing windows for each other. Like, I think those are elements that can carry over. Like, some of the overlaps and different runs and stuff like that. Like, I think you can see the skeleton of how you can translate some of that to basketball. And even with football, like, I want to say, my guy Deontay Lee, he was starting like a series where he was kind of bringing football concepts to basketball and trying to marry the two, which I thought was very interesting. So like I would say stock answer, yes, there are elements. Like I think for me, it's very much just movement and passing in general in these sports that you can kind of see similar concepts. How are they creating space for one another? How are they putting strains on defenses as a whole or on a specific area of the field, the pitch, whichever sport you're watching? Those are the things that I think can kind of carry over. Also glad you brought up the Chip Kelly philosophy, because when I saw that question, as I was reading the question initially, that was the very first thing that popped up for me. And so naturally it ends with the Chip Kelly reference and Spo talking about like the tempo, which that was always a funny thing for me, where Spo just kind of gets the pace and space thing. And those Heat teams were never high in terms of like actual pace. But yeah, like I do think you can bring certain elements. Steve, what say you?
Nothing.
Ah, okay. Fair enough. All right. Second question from Michael. Do you think if the Magic had everyone healthy, they should try running a 3-point guard lineup? Sort of like what the Suns did in 2014 or 2015.
What do you think?
I guess that would just mean like Paolo at the five. Like, I'm intrigued. So what would this be like? Cole, Markel, Jalen, Franz, and Paolo? Like, that's a fun lineup.
I think if you have Markel and Suggs, you could do it. Like if you just go three really, really small, I don't know how like optimal that is. Mm-hmm. There's enough like versatility. I think they should at least try it out. That's just me because I like Paolo at the five.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think they should try Paolo at the five, Franz at the four, let your guards play around it and have some fun. So I think they should try it. What say you?
I'm here for it. Like, I think they have the ability to do so. Like, we know what Markel and Jalen can do defensively. And Cole competes on that end and is just quietly one of the best guard rebounders in the sport and has been for quite some time. So, like, I think you can do that. Like, that's going to depend on, I guess I just wonder, like, what the base coverage for that group would be. Like, if it's Paolo in a drop, like, do we love that? I don't know. And, again, though Cole competes, do you want to just turn that into a switch all? And have him navigating stuff? Like, I don't know. So, like, there are some questions, but that is a lineup I would be intrigued to see. Steve, would you put that on your push notifications list?
Yeah, okay. I would. It counts.
Got you. All right.
I'll go back to Michael's first question. I wanted to mess with you.
Okay.
my thing is, like, which philosophies are we talking about? Nikias, you already don't like all bench lineups, so that takes hockey off the board. I mean, you could argue that, like, the defense that hockey has when in they're trying to like stop a penalty is kind of like zone. So that's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. There's elements of play action when there's misdirection. A whole lot of players go HB dive. That's all I got. I'm a Hooper's Hooper.
I'm a Hooper's Hooper. Tremendous content. Okay. Well, let's close this out with DJ, who says, peace, y'all. I appreciate everything y'all do for the W, the NBA, and basketball content in general. Thank you. I've spent years, since 2013 to be exact, defending Gonzaga basketball and getting into arguments about why the program is elite and how a lot of their hoopers will be good in the league. Let me pause right there. I love that.
Okay.
I love that as a concept. I have been battling for 10 years about why this college program is good. That's good stuff. Zags have a lot of dudes in the NBA who can straight up ball, and we got to acknowledge that Mark Few and his crew are fantastic at development. While folks like Adam Morrison and Robert Sacre had less than memorable NBA careers, the current list of Zags in the NBA are so much fun to watch. I need a solid dunker spot segment on my Zags. Steve and Nikias, who are your five favorite Zags to watch in the NBA, and which players would you consider to be solid pieces on a playoff roster? With Julian Strahler's recent 21-point outburst, there's so much fun being had in Zag basketball circles.
Well, I assume I'm kicking this off. I'm not going in order.
Okay.
Just five favorite Gonzaga players.
Indeed.
Gotta go Chet Holmgren.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta go Domantas Sabonis.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta go Andrew Nembhard.
Mm-hmm. That tracks.
Julian Strother for me cracks the list.
Oh, okay.
Am I going Kelly Olynyk or Zach Collins? I might go Zach Collins.
Okay.
No disrespect to Jalen Suggs.
In terms of my five favorite, Chet is also on my list. Sabonis is also on my list. Kelly Olynyk is just on my list. Brandon Clark is also on my list. Get well soon, brother. He's absolutely one of my favorite Zags. The fifth spot is where I had trouble. Like, the cutoff at five just hurts. Because you have Zach Collins, who I literally just talked about on Tuesday. But even then, like, favorite's probably strong. I've been impressed. Corey Kispert, who's just fun to watch offensively. Jalen Suggs, naturally. Like, it's probably Jalen Suggs for me. Like, the defense is very, very fun. But no, Gonzaga does have some fun pieces in there. As far as just... Oh, go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say, what's the real debate? Is it just that they got drafted high? Because I feel like Gonzaga's always produced just solid players.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember Dan Dickow, Richie Fromm, like Ronnie Turioff. They was going to be able to hoop. They could help you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the problem
is. Just waiting on the quote-unquote wow factor, I guess. In terms of solid playoff pieces, who do I trust to just not be a negative right now? I mean, like, we've seen it with Brandon Clark. We're fresh off the Rui run. I think Chet's firmly just going to be good. Nembhard's going to make winning plays. I would like to see another year of Sabonis. I think the Golden State matchup was just not fun to him. So I'm curious to see, like, Kings versus someone else. to see what the Sabonis thing is. I'm not going to go a hot take. No, you can't do anything with him in the play. So we'll see. Also, he just had like the thumb injury last year, which also stinks. So I'll keep an eye on that. I think eventually Jalen will be. Like, I do kind of worry about like the Julian defense and the Jalen offense, like what teams may do to those guys on either end of the floor in the playoff context. Similar thing with Corey Kispert. Like, I think his shooting is going to be very valuable, but to team to say we're putting you in action and see what you do. Not that we probably have to worry about that with Washington anytime soon, but that is something that I have back of my mind there. Rui does have to prove that the shooting is real over a longer stretch. Zach Collins is an interesting one. I feel like he either just plays 30 minutes and does everything, or the minutes just get limited to like 16 or 17 against like bigger fives. So I'm kind of in a weird place with Zach. I'd like to see it. We have seen Olynyk on many of playoff teams. I think he's proven he could be a playoff contributor. It's pretty deep Gonzaga. Like, I hear you, DJ. Do we get anything from Petrusev, I guess is my question. Part of the Harden trade and flip to Sacramento. I don't think he's played yet. I just have no
real... TBD.
Ah, I see. That is, I guess we shall see. So thank you for the question. And once again, friends, if you have basketball thoughts at any time, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. That is dunkerspot@yahoo.com. Steve, do you have free throws?
Do you have free throws?
I do not.
This man.
What? We just went through 87 questions. What you mean?
Oh, yeah, the season has started. Nikias has started the shenanigans, gosh, folks.
Darn it.
Buckle up. Well, better press conference. Joe Mazzulla in Philly talking about an article from 7 years ago. Or Nikola Jokic saying, hey, don't talk. I'm going to just guess what y'all going to say. I'd already know. And then just saying stuff.
The Mazzulla one was so funny, dog. That fan came out with, I read a really interesting article from you. I was like, oh no. Like, it was funny, but it was also like, holy crap, this is the one thing I never want to happen to me in a press room. No matter how fair I think my words or thoughts were, like, I just don't want to end up on a clip. NBA head coach owns reporter. Like, no, that's just not even. And like, obviously watching the clip, you see like they're very much joking. Like, it's not a big deal. It's like, it's honestly fine. But like, oh, that sparks some anxiety for me. Like, oh no. If I ever drop some drop some stats in an article and I try to ask questions like, hey, we won tonight. Looks like our post-up offense was pretty good, huh? It's like, oh no. My fault, OG. I'll take the Missoula one. That was fun.
Okay. Are some media folks ready to have the conversation with the trend that we've seen in some of these press conferences?
I think the answer is no.
Okay. We can table it. We'll get back.
Okay.
We'll
I have back. Thoughts, but yeah, we can. Yeah.
We'll oh, go ahead. What are your thoughts? No, just... let him fly, bud. Let him go.
Oh, man. I think for me, as someone that's like doing this on the NBA side and also the WNBA side, like, I do think there's just a general do better button that could be pressed. Like, I do think there's a better reading of the room that we could collectively do. I think so many things in general happen on a basketball court to where we can have more detailed questions or more specific questions. And in general, just better framing. So even if it is a quote unquote basic one, it leaves room for whoever you're talking to, coach, player, whatever the case may be, to really expound on things versus giving them the leeway to say yes or no when that's kind of it. So like, I'm always just going to be pressing for better in that regard. And as someone, again, someone that's in it, like, I'm always just trying to be better in that regard. So like, I think there's room. Like, this is something that we could just do a pod on, honestly, but I will just leave it there. Conversations probably do need to be had. Some reflection probably needs to be had. But that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Okay. More fun stat to you. Player X defended player Y, and this was what they were as the primary defender, or single game plus minus?
I feel like the answer is no, because I feel like a large swath of people that use either of those just don't know what it means. And it's just like, you know the meme, I guess it's a meme now, but you know the meme where it's like, I have no idea how you got the right answer, but you used the wrong formula. Mm. Like, I feel like we have some of that where it's like, yeah, this player may have shot like 3 of 10, but like, also there are like 2 actions beforehand that preceded the miss. So like, they didn't really force it. They were just the closest defender there. Like, they're just, those stats can work within context, which is just a general stat point. Like, the stats work within context. And I guess with plus minus, like, it just means the team was outscored with you on the court. It's not a direct, you played bad. Like, the possibility, you can play well within a bad lineup and the lineup gets outscored. That doesn't mean you were bad. And so, as always, like, the numbers go, you marry the numbers and the film. You don't do one or the other. There's my spiel.
Okay. What is funnier, Anthony Edwards calling Mike Conley bite-bite, or
what?
Mike Conley saying, I've never heard him call me that before, ever.
It's absolutely the latter, because that was my thought. Like, when has he ever said that? Oh, Lord.
Why did LeBron yell at the last 2-minute report?
Hey, man, it's always funny when LeBron gets on Twitter.
Or before you continue, okay. Was that funnier than when he yelled at a streaming service?
Basketball goats, they're just like us. Oh, ooh. Lord, man of the people.
Stronger defensive player of the year case, Alex Caruso or Mitchell Robinson?
Ooh. You know, can I just use this as a very quick sounding board to say Mitchell Robinson is really freaking good at basketball. Go ahead, and bud. Should be in the very, very, very early defensive player of the year / all defense conversations. That man is insane as a rim protector. He's very good in drop. He's very good at being at the level and dropping back. we will continue to see on the switches, but that man is very good on the interior. He's just one of the most dominant interior forces that we have in the league right now. He deserves his props. He deserves his flowers. Pay more attention to what Mitchell Robinson is doing.
Perfect. You love to see that. Better defensive year so far, Mitchell Robinson or Rudy Gobert?
It is going to be a slight lean for Rudy for me, but Mitchell Robinson has been very, very good. Rudy has also been... the rim protection numbers are insane. He's moving better than he was last year. Rudy in the drop's been good. Rudy navigating space has been, it's just been better off the ball. These are things that have to remain consistent, and he has to do it in the postseason. That's what we're kind of eyeing. But this feels Rudy back, is what it feels like so far this year.
Okay. Whose defense do you believe will stay in the top five towards the end of the season, Minnesota or Orlando?
Whose defense do I believe in more? Minnesota for me. But thank you for bringing up Orlando's defense, though. You see it. Oh, you see it.
What's funnier, the Clippers being 6th in defensive rating or the Suns being 10th in defensive rating?
Funnier is definitely the Suns with all the injuries and waves arms wildly.
What do you mean by waves arms wildly?
Hey, man.
I don't know. What does that mean?
Yeah, I don't know either. It's crazy that they're a top 10 defense without Bobo's defensive player of the year level ability.
Top 10 defense with Yusuf Nurkic starting. You reckon, right?
Shout out KBD in the rotation. It's fire.
Oh, brother. All right. So, if your person asks you a question, like, do you want me to come? And then they say, if you want to, does that mean no?
Oh, my goodness, dog. You know what means no? The answer, no. I want us all to be like happier, and I want us all to be better. And like, I recognize like our life experiences shape the way that we perceive things. I am very aware of life experiences shaping the way that we perceive things and like trying to prevent yourself from being hurt. I'm going to take it as this so I can deal with it and not have to worry about it, yada, yada, yada. I can speak from firsthand experience. However, sometimes things are just what they are. And obviously that depends on you. You have to have a level of trust with the person that you're talking to, et cetera, to believe that. But like, dog, if I'm about to run some errands and you ask me, hey, can I roll with you? And I say, if you want to, it's just open-ended. If you roll along with me, that is cool. If you don't, okay, I was about to leave anyway. That's all that means. It's not a secret, no, I hate you, oh my God, why are you trying to take, like, no. If I don't want you to roll with me, I would just say no. Or I'd rather not. Mm. Actually, this is some me time that I wanted. Mm. Okay. I don't think it's hard to say those things in a vacuum. Like, context is a key for every relationship, et cetera. But like, no.
I got you. How do you feel like the babies in the Sacramento Kings baby race are doing today? up past their bedtime. Not the greatest performance, but they were happy. What are your thoughts?
I need all of those babies on LinkedIn. It's just they can't do that. Don't bring them back.
Wow.
Look, man. As the dumbest spot is we are the baby race podcast. Oh man. Nobody was ready. Nobody's ready. They had to move the finish line, and the finish line still wasn't crossed. We had a parent wake up their child to do this race. That's not good parenting. I'm sorry.
Oh wow. Like, my
apologies. But like, you can't do that, man. You waking up that baby into just loud arena, bright lights, like thousands of people there. They are confused. They are likely scared. Ultimately, they are sleepy. Like, you just got to take the L on that one. Like, I understand it's not an everyday occurrence that you get chosen for the baby race. If the baby sleep, you got to prioritize the baby. you got to prioritize the baby. Like, I, you know, obvious grain of salt. I am childless, so, like, I could just be very loud and wrong. But, like, from my view, you just don't do that to a baby, dog. They don't know what's happening. I just, come on. Come on.
Oh, that is priceless. You'd love to see that. Last question, final one. What are you willing to do for that Eagles jacket?
Use my debit card.
Oh.
You're not getting, you're not getting me, buddy. Just, oh,
my bad.
Oh, Twitter is such an interesting place, man. I have to be careful about how I express that clothing items are intriguing to me, apparently. I learned that the hard way. I'm glad you got enjoyment out of that.
Gosh, buddy. Hit the horns, bud.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. And generally, our podcast is up on JJ Redick's YouTube channel every Tuesday. That is every Tuesday. So if you have not subscribed to JJ Redick's YouTube channel, do that. Also, check out our last episode if you haven't already. I think it was pretty good in my unbiased opinion. Anyway, you can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join us in the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having fun discussions in there. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties where we are watching NBA games virtually every night. So the link to the room should be hyperlinked into your podcast description. If so, just click on that link into your information, into your League Pass stuff. It is free, no shenanigans. If not, if it's not hyperlinked, just copy and paste the link into your browser. Once again, enter the information. It is free, no shenanigans. Real-time analysis, top-tier vibes. We have antics sometimes. We'll pull people up on stage. They'll rant about life, get some jokes off. It's a really fun time, really wholesome, inclusive community. So come rock with us. Watch some basketball games with the Dunker Spot crew. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.
Hey, Nikias, great show. Why did Brooklyn chant that at James Harden?